Good morning.
Good morning, Council.
May it please the Court, my name is Seth Johnson, and I represent Desert Citizens Against Pollution and Sierra Club. This case is about EPA's refusal to regulate all the hazardous air pollutants that gold mines emit. A single gold mine can emit hundreds of pounds of mercury, more than an average coal-fired power plant, as well as tons of cyanide and hundreds or thousands of pounds of non-mercury hazardous metals like lead, arsenic, and chromium. Based on gold mines' mercury emissions, EPA listed the gold mine ore processing and production area source category under Section 112(c)(6) of the Clean Air Act. But when it set standards under D2, EPA failed to carry out its Clean Air Act duties in two ways. First, it didn't regulate the full...
You concede that to the extent that C6 requires standards under D4, your argument has no purchase at all.
We don't believe D4 is at issue in this case.
EPA may not be at issue in the case in terms of standards developed under D4, but in terms of interpreting the statute, it might be relevant.
In terms of interpreting the statute, it might be relevant, yes.
Because your argument for what C6 means requires that the coverage in D2 be brought in to C6, or parent coverage, possible coverage under D2 be brought in, so that to the extent that C6 mandates one set of standards and another set of standards, the coverage would not work at all for the D4 standards.
Well, I think our argument about the coverage of C6 stems from its plain language. The plain language says...
Yeah, but its plain language encompasses D4 standards as well.
Right, but it requires...
So just to be clear, your vision of the way C6 works is that for a source that is EPA ends up regulating under D2, you have... every happened site to be required to be covered, whereas a source that is regulated under D4, it's just the old seven identified by C6.
Not quite, I don't think.
No?
C6 tells EPA to set standards for sources. And in 1990, when Congress amended Section 112 of the Clean Air Act, it did so because the previous approach that it had EPA take of identifying hazardous air pollutants and then going through and setting standards for a pollutant and then setting standards, identifying a safe level for a pollutant and then setting standards source by source by source, was ineffective at regulating the full range of hazardous air pollutants. And it was just ineffective. It only identified seven or eight. It had only regulated some of their sources. So in 1990, Congress changed the Clean Air Act's approach completely to have it go through to provide a list of hazardous air pollutants and then to tell EPA to set standards for sources. And by setting standards for sources...
I mean, it is still the case under your reading of the statute that the scope of HAPs covered by C6... covered in the sense of required to be regulated by C6, turns on whether the particular source fits within D2 or D4, right? You have no linguistic claim for the broad sweep of C6 with respect to standards developed under D4, right?
I think EPA...
Tell often likes to say, answer that yes or no.
Well, I'm not sure I understood that one.
I have to confess,
I would have a very hard time answering that one.
Do you have any difficulty understanding
Thank
it?
You. Our reading of C6 is that it requires EPA to set a combination of D2 or D4 standards that
right.
cover all the hazardous air pollutants that a listed source category emits. EPA can set a standard...
Do you have any linguistic basis for saying that with respect to a source, which following the statute EPA is to regulate under, develop standards under D4, there is any basis at all for going beyond the seven HAPs identified in C6.
Any linguistic basis? Yes, I think that the word or can be interpreted to mean one or the other or both. And C6 tells EPA to set standards for the source. And
I understand.
And we know that Congress wanted EPA to set standards that comprehensively and effectively regulated hazardous air pollutants.
You're jumping ahead. Let's say that sources can be, it seems to be a premise of C6, that sources may be governed by D2 or D4 or even, as you said, by both. I don't know. Very complicated. But let's assume that, as you've just asserted it. Right?
Okay.
Let's suppose with respect to a source where it turns out standards that are developed only under D4, you have, isn't it the case, no linguistic basis for saying that the standards are to cover every HAP as opposed to the seven C6 HAPs. And if you do have a linguistic basis, share it with me.
As I said, I think that the word or can be interpreted to mean one, the other, or both.
How does that change the outcome?
You also have to interpret the language in context of the problem that Congress was trying to solve.
Well, and I want to return to that, yeah. but just sticking for a moment with this relatively narrow issue, isn't it the case that there is no linguistic basis whatever for saying that the broad sweep of C6, that is to say, at the standards to be developed for a particular source, that has any purchase at all with respect to a source for which standards are developed exclusively under D4, which, as you yourself have said, C6 seems to contemplate?
I'm not entirely sure I followed the whole question there.
Well, I'm trying to think if there's any way I can make it clearer.
If you're breaking it up, I'm really not getting
either. Let me go back. Your argument says, look, we have a cross-reference in C6 to D2. In D2, you say, requires that the standards developed under it are to cover, then by a series of grammatically permissible readings, you take us back to all HAPs that have been identified as HAPs, right?
Yes.
Okay. That exercise, assuming it works for D2, does not work in any respect for D4. Is that not correct? You can look at, it's fair to look at D4 and tell me if you see any way in which it does.
If you interpret D4 and take it totally out of the statute, then you're right. I agree.
How do you mean totally out of the statute? The statute mandates standards under D2 or D4. It seems, as you said, to contemplate that some standards may be developed exclusively under D4. You have a linguistic argument for D2, mm-hmm. and I see none for D4.
I think I have to agree with you that the text of D4 taken alone does not.
So how does the rest of the text somehow or other get you into a broader reading for standards developed under D4?
Well, D4 is an alternative that can be used for certain pollutants.
Right.
When setting standards under subsection D.
Right.
We already know from National Lime that when EPA sets standards under D1, and the default way for EPA to set standards under D1 is D2, we already know from National Lime that it has to set standards for all the hazardous air pollutants.
What we're worrying about here is C6, not D1, mm-hmm. right?
Right. But
what gives your argument such strength as it has turns on your reading of D2. Without D2, you're nowhere.
C6 operates as a triggering mechanism.
Right.
Congress set up subsection C of 112 to tell EPA when to regulate categories.
Right.
And then it told EPA in subsection D how to regulate the categories.
How, exactly.
Right, and how.
How to find the standards.
Well, part of how to regulate the source categories is what pollutants do you have to regulate that a source emits.
And the language you rely on to get us there is the language in D2, mm-hmm. which has no parallel whatever in D4.
Yes, and we also rely on National Wine.
Is it clear from the, I guess it's in the 47, give me the document under review here, I'll find it in a second. Is it clear which subsection EPA was purporting to act under?
Yes, EPA only purported to act under subsections D2.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
The text of D2 is itself clear.
76 Fed Reg was the document I was trying to refer to. Excuse me, go ahead.
The text of D2 itself is clear. It tells EPA to set standards for that require the maximum reduction in emissions of the hazardous air pollutants subject to this section.
Let me make a couple of interruptions for practical suggestions. If you would put the JA references next to the ruling under review, it would make it easier for us to find it. If you would use either the code site or the stat site, one or the other, instead of having statutory sections in your brief and the code sections in your appendix, that would make it easier for us. And if you had a table of contents for your statutory appendix, that also would make it easier. But back to what we were discussing at the moment. So EPA has not asserted any authority under subsection 4 for what they're doing here. D4, is that correct?
It has not asserted any authority under D4. And the phrase, the hazardous air pollutant subject to this section, can have only one meaning. There's only one reasonable interpretation of that phrase, and it's the complete list of hazardous air pollutants that are subject to section 112 of the Clean Air Act.
Let's think about that. First, the C6 starts out, its very first words are with respect to, and then it lists seven chemicals, right?
Yes.
Would it not be a reasonable reading of C6 that the remaining language in C6 relates to regulation of the seven chemicals?
Well, no.
And it doesn't say, well, in connection with these seven chemicals, go out and do something. It says, with respect to these, do something.
That might be a reasonable approach that Congress could have taken, but Congress in the text said you had told EPA to list sources accounting for 90% of the aggregate emissions of these pollutants and to set standards sources.
Let's go back. I mean, it says emissions of each such pollutant and it's subject to standards under D2 that gets you where you want to go, right?
Well, and the fact that its sources have to be subject to standards.
Yeah. But it's the invocation of standards under subsection D2 that is essential.
Yes.
Right. Okay. Can I just ask you about the purpose of Congress? It looked to me as if Congress thought that these seven should enjoy a kind of priority. They were given a special mandate. But under your reading, that priority is essentially lost because any time EPA starts embarking on regulating sources of one of the seven, it's got to widen the scope of its inquiry to all HAPs.
But it still has to set the same strict standards.
I know that's your conclusion, sure. But just in terms of the focusing function of C6, that's completely lost.
No, I disagree with that. The focusing function is still there because it tells EPA to go about regulating the sources. Congress chose the method for singling these pollutants out for special attention. The method was to subject their sources to regulation, and that purpose is served by interpreting the text to mean exactly what it says, what it literally says to mean, which is to regulate the sources according to D2. Yeah, and D2 in turn tells it to regulate all the pollutants.
But your argument turns on the, when you used, it depends on under in C6 as meaning under in the sense that every word in D2 counts, including covering the scope, while under for D4 has no such meaning. For D4, it's clearly just how you actually decide how extreme, how stringent the standard should be, right?
Yes.
And one might suppose that by way of parallelism, Congress intended the same thing for the invocation, the cross-reference to D2.
But the text of D2 is still clear.
It's clear to you.
Well, I don't think, in order to read it another way, I think EPA proposed either to read it, the text of D2 as meaning different things at different times, which is not a tenable interpretation, implies that the text of D2 has no meaning, the phrase.
Even assuming that D2 is perfectly clear, under may not be clear.
If D2 is clear and EPA's interpretation of D2 is unlawful, that's the end of the matter.
No, it isn't the end of the matter, because the extent of the push of the language in D2 turns on what the meaning of under is in C6. If under means simply using the same approach and with the same stringency as under D2, which is what it clearly means with respect to D4, then your argument disappears.
I think that I respect the question. I think I understand the question, Your Honor, but I think that still reduces some text in D2 to having no meaning. It reads the text out of the statute, which is impermissible.
Can you read it? I take the way Judge Williams is suggesting is to read, and maybe I'm wrong, so you'll have to correct me, is that in emissions of the hazardous air pollutants subject to this section as being the ones that in this circumstance C6 has made subject?
Well, subject to this section, Congress was very clear when it used the phrase.
No, that is one way. I say that's one way to read it, but you say that you would have to read the language out or have it mean nothing. But instead it could mean that D6 C6 has specifically given an instance in which it wants the agency to apply D2, and as to the pollutants in that section, in that subsection, they wanted it to be applied this way.
Then Congress should have said to this subsection or the referring subsection, this section has to have a meaning. It means the whole of section 112.
It could mean just the whole of D.
No, that
Congress calls it section D2.
I'm not aware of anywhere in section 112 that it does that.
Well, it certainly does that in the Clean Air Act. It refers to subsections as section D21 or whatever.
I looked specifically through all of 112 and I couldn't find any references like that. Congress was very precise in its meaning. I may have missed something. The Clean Air Act is obviously very, very long. Mm. But Congress was very, it knows how to refer to the portions of a section. I mean, if it's in section D2 itself, it refers to this section, it refers to subsections, it refers to subparagraphs. And I think it's also, I think that Congress was, there's only one interpretation that's available.
Well, look at the last sentence of D2.
Okay.
It says, none of the measures described in subparagraphs A through D shall, consistent with provisions of section 741C, 7414C. It doesn't say subsection 7414C. It says section.
Right.
So it's using the word section to mean a subsection in that circumstance.
Where are you?
The very last sentence of D2, at least in my version, and for a reason I'm not sure, it seems to be indented slightly, begins with the sentence, none of the measures described in subparagraphs A through D, at the very end of D2, right after E. Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's consistent with the nomenclature that Congress used.
I'm not saying yours isn't maybe even a better reading, but the question is what's a... Is it unreasonable to read
if, that? If Congress, you know, the section 7411 is a section, Congress could have equally referred to that as subsection C of section 7411. But when it refers to, it uses the section word if the largest, the furthest, It's hard to explain.
I have problems in writing opinions doing the same, but I'm not sure I'm completely consistent. I don't know, maybe Congress is more consistent than I am. Can I ask you just about National Lime? So National Lime doesn't actually, the issue in National Lime is not the issue in this case, right? The issue, the argument that the government is making here, they did not make there.
Right, they didn't, in National Lime, they didn't think
just
it was the technology.
Just about there were no Mac. There was no technology, right. So we're not going to do it.
Right. If I can move on to the fugitive emissions.
Well, we'll give you a couple of minutes for that.
I appreciate that. Their EPA has already acknowledged that if it in fact listed the sources of fugitive emissions in the source category it listed, that it had an obligation to set standards for those emissions. So the only issue here is, or the first, the primary issue, the key issue is whether the source category actually includes those sources. And in its brief and in developing the rule, EPA confirms that it did in fact include those sources in the category it listed. It listed the category in the preamble at, I'm afraid I don't remember the JA site precisely. I think it's 121 or 122, 9451 is the reference in the Federal Register. And it defined its scope in the regulations in 63.11651.
What do you do with the language of 11640B?
The affected source?
This subpart applies to each new or existing affected source. The affected sources are, etc.
Yeah. Well, 11640A says you're subject to this subpart if you're a gold mine or processing and production facility as defined in the regulations. The affected source definition certainly conflicts with that definition, but it's not the definition that EPA gave as defining the source category. EPA, this approach of listing the category in the definition in the preamble and providing a definition in the regulations is consistent with EPA's past practice. In 2007, for example, it listed the electric arc furnace steelmaking facilities category. It accomplished the listing in the preamble of the proposed rule, and then in the regulations, it defined the scope of that category.
Did the scope as defined include the electric arc?
Yes.
Right, so that's not quite the same thing, is it?
Well,
here you're saying that the definition is different than, or perhaps not consistent with the preamble, are you not?
Yes, I am saying.
Not the case with the electric arc, was it?
That's correct, and because the preamble.
That's not on point, is it?
Well, because the preamble is inconsistent with the regulations, the regulatory text.
Text controls, not the preamble.
So the preambular, the preambular definition that's inconsistent loses. And in the rule itself here, EPA treated the definition that it gave in 11651 of gold mine ore processing and production facility as defining the scope of the category. When it wanted to define certain sources out of the category, it changed that definition. It didn't change the affected source definition. And EPA claims that it's interpreting the definition of the category, but it points to no ambiguity in that definition. It just makes statements that contradict that definition. And as Judge Santel pointed out, the regulatory text controls in that circumstance.
What about Section 63.11640? Am I subject to this subpart?
Yes, that's, and the answer is you're subject to the subpart if you own or operate a gold mine or processing and production facility as defined in 63.11651, that is an area source.
But it says the affected pretreatment, the affected sources are each collection of ore pretreatment processes, each collection of carbon processes with mercury. It quotes a number of things, all of which appear to fit the government's description of what is covered.
In B.
Yeah, in B.
Yeah. But that's not where it's defining the source category. It's defining the source category in A.
But it is a, that's a regulation. That's part of the regulation. That's not, yeah. That's not preambular or commentarial or anything else.
That's true.
The very regulation itself is inconsistent with itself.
Right.
Well, when that happens, who do we defer to?
Well, I think it would be, I think you defer to an agency interpretation unless there's any reason to suspect that it's not a, it's fair and considered judgment. EPA has said in the past and done in the past, taken the approach of defining the regulation, I'm sorry, listing the category in the preamble.
But when you put it that way,
yeah,
they couldn't be clear as to what they want. They say in the response to the commentary, these fugitive emissions are not part of the source category. And they say in 63.11640 exactly what is part of the source category. So even assuming that they are contradictory with each other, why can't they resolve the contradictory, you know, which of the two inconsistent statements in the same regulation are the one, is the one that governs? Why is that not the right answer?
I think that lets EPA put out regulatory mush.
Well, the alternative might be to vacate it, and then you get no protection at all. I mean, well, how would we know which side of this to vacate? They have two regulations, both of which are inconsistent. Why should we vacate the one that someone outside the agency believes is what the agency believes, as compared to vacating the one that the agency thinks is inconsistent with its position?
No one's challenged the definition of the gold mine ore processing and production facility. We didn't challenge the listing decision, and the scope of the category is defined, we contend, by the definition of gold mine ore processing and production facility.
If you go back and use your own phraseology, if they have put out regulatory mush, why is it not for them in the first instance to unmush it? It sounds rather like a Meade task or Chevron task, doesn't it, that if there's something that you can't clarify for sure which of two meanings are controlling, usually the court's going to defer to what the agency says, aren't we?
Usually it does, yes.
Yeah, okay. Thank you, counsel. I think we have again talked someone way beyond his time, so we'll hear from the respondent and give you back a couple of minutes for rebuttal if you need. Now, you may have witnessed the last example that once you get up here on rebuttal, no telling what's going to happen to you, but if you need rebuttal, you can have a couple of minutes.
Good morning, Your Honors. Jack Lipschultz from the Justice Department for EPA. With me today at council table is Amy Branning from EPA's Office of General Counsel. I'd like to start with the statutory issue. With respect, EPA didn't rely on the D4 issue that Judge Williams was asking
about. They did or did not?
Did not. Rely on that. I think it's an interesting issue, but given that the agency didn't articulate.
Our job is to construe the statute.
I appreciate that, but where I was going is that I don't think we need to reach the D4 question, because I'd like to offer my thoughts on the agency's rationale separate and apart from that, which I think is sufficient. The two most pertinent provisions here, obviously, are 112D2 and 112C6. Neither of which, on their own terms, specifies whether Congress intended C6 sources to be limited to the seven pollutants listed there or to the full range of sources listed in Section 112B. But, you know, the language, the pertinent language of 112D2 is hazardous air pollutants subject to this section. This section would include 112C6. Language 112C6 says subject to standards under subsection D2. So there, in some ways, the terms are general, and they're also a little bit circular. National Lime doesn't necessarily shed light on this issue either, because that case focused on major, not area sources, and it relied primarily on section 112B1 and D1, not 112B2.
How's D1 different?
Well, it's different in pertinent ways. If you look at the discussion of this issue in National Lime, it actually eliminates the language in D1 that talks about area sources. It replaces it with ellipses. If you look at the language that is in D1 that was actually ellipses out of National Lime.
Maybe giving the court more credit for its use of ellipses.
It was appropriate in that case. Well, I don't mean to suggest that the court was thinking about area sources there. In fact, I'm suggesting just the opposite. It was only focusing on major sources, so the area source language in D1 wasn't relevant to its decision, but it's relevant here because it says area sources listed under subsection C. And that's how we get here. That's the door through which these area sources enter the 112 program. So it's an important, it's perhaps not the be-all and end-all, but certainly it's a clue that Congress thought that for purposes of 112D, what happened under 112C for area sources was important. And that leads us to the crucial distinction in the Act as a whole.
Wait, tell me again how your position with respect to D1 is consistent.
Well, look at D1. It talks about major sources and area sources of hazardous air pollutants listed. For each subcategory, it's a little. It would be helpful if there are commas or something here. But the way the language reads, it says establishing emission standards for each category or subcategory of major sources. That's what National Lime was focusing on. But then it goes on to say, and area sources of hazardous air pollutants listed for regulation pursuant to subsection C. So in other words, it's referring not just to area sources in general, the same way it generally refers to major sources. It's taking notice of the fact that area sources only come into the 112 program through the very goal-oriented provisions and targeted provisions in 112C. 112C6, which is at issue here, is one of those, and the goal there is these seven specified pollutants. And the reason the statute is written this way is that there's a huge practical difference between area sources and major sources. Major sources tend to be, as the name suggests, very significant industrial facilities that not only emit a lot of pollutants, but actually were, in Congress's view, better positioned to be controlled for those emissions. Congress is, by contrast, very sensitive to area source regulation. They're smaller sources, in many cases very ubiquitous. So the way you area sources come in at all to the 112 program is in very limited ways. Through 112C3, there's two different ways there. One requires a health finding, and the other is an urban air toxics finding. Those are not at issue here. The one that is at issue here is 112C6, which is for the seven specified pollutants.
I want to do something again that may not be the most insightful question, but is EPA's position that they can regulate mercury alone and not do anything with the other six, or is it just only that it can regulate the seven and not do anything with any other pollutants besides?
Here, well, it's partially a factual question. For these particular sources, the only 112C6 pollutant that they emit is mercury. That's why EPA focused on mercury here. Well, and I don't think there's any dispute about that.
Why are we here on this case then?
Because under the petitioner's view, it's a little bit of a tail wagging the dog thing, that they think that once EPA required, I think I should back up a little bit and say most of the goal in 112C6 is met through regulation of major sources.
Yeah.
It's a relatively smaller universe of area sources.
So what is it that they're wanting you to do that you're not wanting?
At these facilities, they want to regulate every hazardous air pollutant that they emit, whether it's on the 112C6 list or not. That's right. I mean, they can explain their argument better.
I thought your position a moment ago was the only one here is mercury, so it doesn't matter in this case.
The only one on the 112C6 is mercury. On the 112C6 list is mercury.
This is also with the same preface that Judge Santel asked about his question. which is probably an obvious answer. So they point out that there's a lot of cyanide, which is also produced in these. Could that be regulated in some other way, if not this way?
I think EPA, the only other way would be that EPA would have to make a finding that was appropriate under the health effects criterion or
that's
environmental effects.
That's the other section, D.
112C3.
C3.
Right.
And D4, or not?
No. In terms of D4 is different. That's what the standards actually will turn out to be. But C3 and C6 provide this.
Has a health threshold been established for something like cyanide?
I'm not sure, Your Honor, to tell you the truth. It's not something that's in the record of this case that I'm aware of.
You're saying you'd look under C3?
But C3 has two sources. Different ways that area sources can come into the 112 program. The first is a finding of adverse health or environmental effects. And the second, the language in C3 is a little confusing. It talks about 90% of the top 30 urban hazardous air pollutants, and you have to read that in conjunction with 112K of the Act, which directs EPA to come up with an urban air toxic strategy. So I don't know that the second part of that would be relevant here because these gold mines are generally not in urban areas, but if there was a feeling on part of the petitioners that EPA should look at this under 112C3, they could always petition the agency to do so. But what's at issue here is what the agency actually did, which was look at the 112C6 question. And the agency only took up the mercury regulation for this source carrier, which is an area source carrier. Nobody disputes that either. These are not major sources. These are area sources, not typically part of the 112 program, but they were here because EPA needed to reach these area sources to help it meet the 90% requirement for 7 specified pollutants in 112C6. That's the only reason these facilities are in the 112 program. So that's an important fact to keep in mind. The other important fact, I think, just for context to keep in mind, is that while most of the 112C6 goal is met through regulation of major sources, there are some other area sources that are in there for certain pollutants, and the consequences of regulating some of them, the practical consequences are enormous because some area sources, these area sources are a relatively discrete number, but some area sources like certain types of small boilers, there are thousands of them through the country. And so there's no indication that Congress intended EPA, because of the need to meet this very specific targeted goal in 112C6, intended to expose all these thousands of other sources in other contexts to the full range of Section 112 regulation. I mean, the bottom line is that there's a big for major source regulation, as the court discussed in National Lime and its progeny, it's something of an automatic process. Congress determined that these big industrial sources should have standards for the full range of Section 112 pollutants. But for area sources, it took almost the opposite approach. It said it's not an automatic process. There's some goal-oriented targeted finding that stands at the doorway before that gets into the 112 program at all. And in the 112C6 contest, that doorway is limited to these 7 HAP. And so what I want to get back to is we start out by talking about the actual words in 112C and 112D, and my proposition was that they're not dispositive. When you put them in the context of this major source area distinction, the statute as a whole, the reasonableness of EPA's resolution of that ambiguity, I think, is very clear. Maybe I'll move on just a few minutes just to say a few words about the fugitive emissions.
Say another word about how in D1 you can treat major sources different than area sources. I appreciate that there's an and.
Yes.
But then the rest of the sentence applies to both.
In accordance with the schedules provided in subsections C and E?
Yeah.
Right, but again, we have another cross-reference section C there, which has the specific provisions for area sources that we've been talking about. Even in that part of the section as well. Just briefly on the fugitives issue, the petitioner's main argument is essentially, I don't know what the right word is. It's an argument about words and semantics.
That's what we spend our time on.
I know. I don't mean to disparage that. It keeps a lot of us busy. But in this particular case, I think it's the actual thing that EPA was trying to do here was crystal clear from the proposal all the way to the final. In the proposal, this is at Joint Appendix pages 95 to 96, columns 1 and 2 on page 96, I think especially. EPA stated explicitly in the preamble at the proposal stage that it was only including thermal processes in the source category. And the reason why, it also explained in the same passages of page 95 to 96, was because the new information that had been developed through three different sources, the toxic release inventory, studies done in conjunction with State of Nevada, and EPA's own questionnaires, had developed good information on emissions from thermal processes, and it had only used those emissions data for purposes of meeting the 112C6 90% criterion. In other words, it was only regulating thermal processes because, A, that's the only information, only good information it had on emissions, and B, that's the only emissions it needed to hit the goal-oriented provision in section 112C6 and 90%, and that was stated expressly. It then went on to say the way we're doing this is by broadly defining gold mine processing facility as a guide, and this is at page 95 of the joint appendix, but then cross-referencing to the definition of affected source for people to determine sort of the details and figure out whether they have a facility that's actually regulated. And that was, for better or worse, the process. EPA thought that was a clear way to sort of put the fine print on what exactly the source category involved. I think it's worth noting we didn't make a waiver argument in this case. I don't think there is one, but petitioners haven't pointed any comments where somebody said, we're confused about this. You should do it a different way. Nobody can tell what the source category is. Instead, the comments on the fugitives issue were very general. They went right to the substantive issue. They said, you should regulate fugitives for X, Y, and Z reasons. They didn't say, the way your regulations are written is confusing or people can't follow it and that sort of thing. When we got to the final rule, for that reason, EPA took a very similar approach, and this is at Joint Appendix pages 121 to 122. The general definition, again, EPA characterized only as a guide to put people on notice. And noted that the source category was, the details of it were defined through the regulatory definition of affected source, which is the provision that Judge Garland was referring to before. It also explicitly referred back to the discussion in the proposal for the rationale. This is at Joint Appendix page 122. The final will refer back to the proposal, said, we explain, look back to the proposals, you'll see why we did it this way, basically. So in sum, EPA was explicit that thermal processes were, for various reasons, the only part of these facilities that were part of the source category for regulation. It reasonably chose to express the details of this through the definition of affected source. Nobody really said in comments that's a bad way to do it. And in any event, the end result is a reasonable result, and EPA gets, under Auer versus Robbins, a lot of deference.
My colleagues have no further questions. Your time is up.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
I think petitioner has no further time, but we will award you 2 minutes for rebuttal if you wish.
Thanks. I'd like to return to D2 quickly. EPA has said that when it regulates source when it lists a source category under C6, this section means C6. But when EPA lists a category under C1, it can't mean C6 because then EPA wouldn't have to it wouldn't be able to set standards for the other pollutants that EPA concedes it has to regulate. It can't mean two things at the same time. The phrase "this section," it can only mean. It can only mean the whole of Section 112. Also, the way that C6 works is similar to the way that C1 works. C1, under C1, a source can be a major source in two ways. It can be a major source because it emits 10 tons of one hazardous air pollutant. And once it emits 10 tons of that one hazardous air pollutant, it's a major source. And EPA concedes it has to be all of its hazardous air pollutants that it emits have to be regulated. C6 operates the same way. You can be listed just because of your emissions of one hazardous air pollutant, but you have to, EPA still has to regulate all the other hazardous air pollutants. Once you're in under D, you're in under D. EPA also claims that Congress intended to give various sources special treatment. It did intend to give various sources special treatment in general. It intended to do that by allowing EPA to regulate them under the looser provisions of D5. However, the point of C6 is to prevent EPA from affording them special treatment. EPA is reading the statute backwards. It's saying when there's an exception, we're going to infer other exceptions. And that's not a reasonable reading of the statute. It's not a form of reasoning that the Supreme Court has said it's familiar with.
Okay. Your time is now up. One of my colleagues has a question.
Sorry, just one small point. So opposing counsel said that if it were to be done this way, it would be a big problem because in regulating things under C6, you may have lots of relatively small entities that are regulated. And if you regulated them for everything, there would be a lot of, well, they would say burdensome. I would guess that the regulatory process would take forever. That is, if each of these small areas thought that they were subject to everything, there in the end might be many, many more years before something like gold mines are designated. Is that a risk?
For gold mines, no.
Well, no, but obviously.
For the boilers? EPA has discretion about how it defines the source category. It might be able to define the source category not to include the smallest boilers. And that would avoid the problem.
But it is the case that in order to meet C6's 90% requirement, its discretion with respect to sources, identification of C6 sources, is necessarily constrained.
Yes.
Okay. Seeing no further, case is submitted. Now give us recess.
See which case is which.
Okay.
So, but other than that, yeah.